It actually comes from a Friday night where a woman is driving home and all of a sudden it hits her, the dishes, the kitchen. It was an absolute mess when she left. So she walks into her home and walks into a clean, sparkling kitchen. Mm-hmm. She flips a Yui, goes out, checks the number on the house. She's at the right address. She comes back in to find her husband putting away the dish towels. Sex begins in the kitchen.
Well, that's Dr. Kevin Lehman responding to the question, why did you title your book, Sex Begins in the Kitchen? Welcome to Focus on the Family. I'm Mike Trout, and we're going to talk again with Kevin on today's edition of the broadcast. And our host is psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson.
Kevin, let's start with what you call a love language. What is a love language?
Well, it's something that each of us should be indebted to our friend Gary Chapman for. You know, Gary wrote that book, The Five Love Languages. Wonderful little helpful book. And I was so appreciative to Gary for knocking those out in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fashion. And run along with me now and see where you are as men on love language. Number one, and these aren't in any particular order, I mean, you can reverse them, physical touch, quality time, acts of service, words of affirmation, gifts. Hmm. Now, each of us want to give love or receive love on probably one of those five basic areas. And to me, what's been so revealing is that God put this man, Kevin, and this woman, Sandy, together in holy matrimony and said, okay, I want you two to become one. Remember, it's not a suggestion or a good idea. It's a commandment. And yet we're so different because my love language is clearly physical touch. Touch me, and Sandy has the joy of my presence.
as long as she wants it.
Yeah, as long as she wants it. And quality time. You know, leave me alone with my wife. Bolt the door in about 4 places to keep the enemy at bay, and I'm a happy guy. Conversely, Sandy is an active service person and a gift giver. She made sure that I brought Dr. Dobson and you, Mike, some gifts. I mean,
sure
she just said, that's something you got to do.
I got a hat for you up there.
That's right. Years ago, I remember sitting in Arcadia, California, with Dr. Dobson at lunch with Sandy and I.
Sent me jam, is what she did.
Yeah, raspberry jam. And your boss, Mike, ate about 17 crackers with raspberry jam on it at lunch that day. And it was interesting because I don't know if you remember this or not, but I ought to share this right now. I tell people all over the country the best single piece of advice I ever got was in Arcadia, California at that lunch. And I asked Jim, I said, I run around this country and I you know what I do? And he said, yeah, I know what you do. I said, I want one thing. I want one tip. I don't want your top 10. I don't want your top 3. I just want one. And here's what Dr. Dobson said. He said, Kevin, before you do anything in life, run it by Sandy first. That's what he told me. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's great advice.
That was great advice. I don't remember giving it to you.
It was profound because women are closer to life by their nature. They're so relational in everything they do.
And they usually see it differently.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to hear it when Shirley sees it differently.
Absolutely.
And 2 or 3 days later, I'll back up and look at it, and there's wisdom in what she says.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's taken me a long time, but I've learned how Sandy sees life. And one of her other love languages is this act of service. So if the Dobsons are coming to the Lehman's home for dinner, get this, Mike. Sandy is going to have big heart-shaped cookies, frosted cookies. And one will say Jim, and the other will say Shirley. And she uses them as like nameplates, you know. This is where you're supposed to sit. Now, I got to tell you, I think that is absolutely stupid. That's the dumbest thing I ever heard of. I wouldn't do that in a million years. But what I'm here to tell you is I've learned that because that's important to Sandy, it's got to be important to me. Mm-hmm. It can't be stupid to me. But
so
here's
that's
the rub.
Her love language.
Right. But here's the rub. It's 10 o'clock, and, you know, I'd like her to come to bed with me. And I'm one of those guys that, you know, I go to bed early. She, God has blessed me with this woman who just kicks into gear about 10 o'clock at night. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, she's still reading. You know, I'm snoring gracefully next to her. Well, here's the rub. I yell. That's one of my spiritual gifts. Hey, honey, when you coming to bed? I can't. I got 12 more cookies to decorate. I said, forget the cookies. Come to bed. I can't. We got company coming tomorrow night. There's the rub. The rub is you know, here's this little baby boy, this little youngest of the three, who says, I want my wife now. And she's saying, no, this is important. I've got to get this done. So sometimes they clash. And getting behind each other's eyes and seeing how we see life just gets you to second base in marriage. It makes it possible for you to make it.
Well, let me bait you a little bit. What you really need to do is change your spouse, right? You need to change Sandy. You need to get her on your timetable. You need to get her to go to bed a little earlier and get up a little earlier. You guys can have breakfast together at 5:30 in the morning. I mean, why couldn't she learn to do that your way?
Oh, boy. You know, this is what I've learned, that if you really want to make progress in marriage, and people are listening to us right now saying, boy, this sounds good, but boy, you don't know what I'm up against. Here's my number one suggestion to you. Empty yourself of the need to change the other person. Empty yourself of that need to change the other person.
But, Dr. Lehman, I can't stand this aspect of her or him.
And you know, life isn't fair. But, you know, when you get that little psychological Brillo pad out and you look at the spotted leopard and you say, I'm going to change that leopard spot, the only thing you're going to end up with is an irritated leopard. It's not going to help. So backing off. I know it doesn't sound right. It doesn't make some sense to some people. But backing off, and really, we talk about what an awesome God we worship. And when we sing praises to the King of Kings in church on Sunday, if this God is so awesome to make the mountains and the Great Lakes that I grew up next to and the oceans, and he made us, he knows the number of hairs in our head, he knows when the sparrow will fall, do you think if we really commit our life to him that he's able to do a work in us?
Well, that sounds wonderful, and it is, but let's make it practical, okay? You already said that Sandra is a lady who likes to get all the dishes done before she goes to bed. In other words, she's a cleanie.
She also doesn't get up in the morning.
Put away. Yeah. Let's suppose you're a slob and you throw your socks on the floor and your underwear in another corner and you leave the towel on the floor in the bathroom, and it absolutely drives her crazy.
Did she call you? Did she call you?
you're telling her not to work on you about that, not to try to change you?
You know, in one of my earlier books, I tell the story of coming home to our little apartment where I was a head resident at the University of Arizona, and I pushed open the door, and it wouldn't open all the way. It was open, but it wouldn't. And what she did in frustration, pulled everything out and threw it in the thing. I'm the baby of the family. She's the firstborn, so she's the one that's neat and tidy and organized, and I'm the one that, you know, is walking around with my underwear in my back pocket. We're just different personalities. But I've learned over those years, and I have. She's had to confront me sometimes. You know, she said to me, it hurt. She said, I'm not your mother. You know, I don't like being told that as a grown man. And yet, I think when I married her, I think I sort of silently gave thanks to God. Thank you for this wonderful woman who seems to be picking up where my dear sweet mother left off. And I think a lot of us as men would owe up to that. So, yeah, I think you've really got to work on changing yourself. And I think part of the respect issue, you respect a child or respect a husband or wife and you tell them how you really feel. That's a respectful act.
Yeah, so you don't change another person by nagging at them.
Not at all.
Or complaining to them. But you can negotiate your way around some of these areas of contention.
Yeah, well,
and she can say to you, Kevin, you know, this really does bother me. Can we find some middle ground here? I'm sure there's some things about me that bother you. Let's see if we can accommodate one another. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's exactly right. And that's part of the negotiation, I think, that occurs in every marriage. But, you know, you've heard some wonderful things about my wife, Sandy. I mean, I don't know a soul on this earth, honestly, who doesn't love Sandy. Sandy's just one of those joyful people to be around.
Why didn't you bring her with you?
I should have. But I can give you zip codes of people who don't like me. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, Sandy, with all of her pluses, she's got a couple of flaws that I really like to discuss with you.
Uh-oh.
And one of them is she's a sleeper. I mean, she can sleep. You heard, you know, yeah. She can stay up till 1. Well, of course, the converse of that is that
she can sleep till 10.
Yeah, 10, 11, 12. I've seen 1. Mm-hmm. I've seen 2. And see, in my framework, and this is where we come to the marriage altar and we bring our rule book. And Kevin has his rule book for marriage and what it's supposed to be like. And Sandy has hers. And this is clearly out of bounds. What are you in bed at 11 o'clock in the morning? And I tell her, the early bird gets the worm. She says, I don't like worms. Well, I've tried yelling. Hey, it seems to me you ought to be up. If I say that, it could be a long day.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a long winter, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
A very long winter, even in a place like Tucson. But I've learned over the years, I bring her a cup of coffee, and I scratch her back. And that's how you get Sandy Lehman out of bed. Hmm. It's not an easy process. It's not a quick process. It takes some time and some effort. But that's how you get her up. You don't get her up by yelling at her.
Her metabolism and her what's called circadian rhythms are just different from yours, aren't they?
Why is he using big words on me?
Well, you said she's doing the dishes at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, exactly.
And she just has shifted her day down a ways.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, I said that that your book, Sex Begins in the Kitchen, is a very practical book with a lot of how-tos. Let's deal with the issue of anger in marriage. And everybody deals with that. There are very, very few couples that don't irritate one another at one point or another. Now, what are some of the right and wrong ways of dealing with it?
Well, again, I wrote a chapter once in a book called How to Be Good and Angry. And I like that title, How to Be Good and Angry. In other words, you can be angry. You know, Jesus, when he walked into the money changers in the temple, he didn't say, "Oh, hi, fellas, have a nice day." To be blunt about it, he threw them out in their Mickey. I don't think you'll find that the term Mickey in the Bible.
I don't remember reading that.
But you get the message. And all of us do have anger in marriage. And I love to take a simple balloon as an example. If every time you got angry, you took this balloon and you just blew air in it, before long, you'd get that balloon to the point where it was almost going to break. And remember when we were kids, we'd take that and we'd stretch the neck of it and make that terrible sound and let the air out?
Mm-hmm. Squeal.
Yeah. The analogy is that if you let things build up inside and you don't talk about them, and again, the scripture says what? Don't let the sun go down on your anger.
Sure.
Then you have these explosions. It's sort of like when you have the flu and you tell yourself, "Oh, I wish I could throw up." How many of us have said that in our lifetime? "I wish I could throw up." There's this huge explosion. The balloon goes. You have this big tirade. And essentially what you've just done, you vomited all over your mate. Do you feel better inside? Physiologically, yes. Psychologically, yes, for a period of time. Because you've let it all out. But what a destructive thing to live with. And that creates somebody who's walking on eggs, which should never be a part of marriage. And so what I'm saying is, if we can teach a couple to have a clear-the-day agenda, whatever you want to call it, it just says, "Hey, let's clear the air for today. Are there some things that we've forgotten to talk about? Are there some things we need to talk about?" I tell people, "Hey, get close. Be eyeball to eyeball." I go as far to tell people, "Hey, take all your clothes off. If you're wealthy and got a jacuzzi nobody can see, or get in your bathtub if you're thin enough, eyeball to eyeball. Now fight. Now talk. Talk from your heart." I mean, it has a way of sort of stripping away all the barriers, no pun intended, but really get us down to the gut leveling of it.
You know, your analogy to a balloon is really brilliant, Kevin, because that is
would
what
you
happens.
Say that again?
That's a one. It's a very simple but brilliant analogy, because I think managing anger in a marriage is the key to survival through a lifetime. That is the key to it, and most people never really master that concept. And they do allow the balloon to blow up. Or, you know, there's another way to do that, which is simply to let go of the crazy thing. And then you have a temper tantrum. The balloon goes all over the whole room. You need to learn how to release that in a controlled manner. If I could talk to young married couples about any one subject that I think would contribute to their lives, it would be managing anger appropriately.
Absolutely. And, you know, just like any young mom who's chasing those toddlers today and they're doing something and they're doing something wrong, you tell yourself, "Oh, he'll stop. She'll stop." No, they're not going to stop. It's going to escalate and get worse. So if you can learn to act right away.
The times that Nancy and I have had the biggest blowouts have not been over the differences that we have between us, which we've probably learned to cope with. But it's when something's happening with the children. Mm. When there is an activity there, when there is some form of discipline that needs to take place, and our differences.
Because that's an area you both care about greatly.
Yes.
And aren't willing to compromise over because it is too intense. It's too important to you.
Have you found that that elevates the tension between a husband and wife?
Absolutely. In fact, I'll tell you what's interesting is if you look at the sameness in us, the sameness in personalities, It's the same. Think of your son or your daughter for a second. The one that's closest to you in temperament is the one you're most likely to butt heads with. And so it is in marriage. And again, I wrote the New Birth Order book, which talks about firstborns and babies and firstborns. And that gets to be an interesting mix, how we come together in marriage as well. But I'll tell you what I've learned in those 32 years with Sandy is, and this is so embarrassing to share on the radio, but I'm going to. I started this practice about 15 years ago. I'd take her to dinner, and then I went to a local hotel, to a resort in Tucson. And again, she calls me Leamy. She says, "All right, Leamy, what are we doing here?" And I said, "Well, we're just going to go in here." She says, "I am not getting out of this car. I don't know what you're up to, but I'm not getting out of this car." I said, "Come on, we're just going to go in here." She said, "I am not getting out of this car. I have no luggage." I said, "You don't need luggage. Just get out of the car." So honestly, I pulled her out of the car, and gently. And she started to walk up toward the front, and I said, "No, not that way, this way." And she seemed a little surprised. I took her up to a room, gentlemen, that I was in that afternoon. Big old king-size bed. Four at the time, not five, little sweetheart roses representing our children. Two books I bought for her. To make a long story short, I tucked her in bed and kissed her goodnight, and I told her I'd be back at 1 o'clock the next day to take her to breakfast. Mm-hmm. And I ordered room service for her so she'd know that someone would be pounding on the door in a few minutes.
You're a manipulative man. Mm-hmm. that's dirty pool.
But just listen to this. We talk about discipline in marriage. I think that takes discipline to do those kind of things. And what I've learned is that Sandy likes to be alone. Once in a while. Now, if I did that tonight, if I come home from Focus and I take my wife to dinner and then to a hotel, if I pulled up to that hotel, she'd say, "Don't bother walking me up. I know the way." She'd be gone. And what I've learned is, and maybe every woman isn't like Sandy, but there's a woman who's 54 years old, mm-hmm. who has a 7-year-old and a 12-year-old and still raising kids. And we walk up to school, we see all these mothers with kids. We say, "How could these mothers who are 13 and 14 and 15 have all these children that look so young to us?" But I've just learned to try to love Sandy from behind her eyes. And whatever her need is, I mean, maybe she is weird. Women are weird. They get up and they announce they're going potty. Why would a woman get up and announce she's going potty in mixed company? If that's not bad enough, then they try to solicit people to go with them. I don't get it. But no matter how weird or strange your wife or your husband is, if you can get behind their eyes and see how they see life, you're in for one of the greatest rides that Almighty God can give you.
Now, the reason she was irritated in the first instance is that she thought there was a motive in your taking her to dinner.
Oh, yeah.
Which took away from that situation, the romantic element.
Yeah, plus she's a firstborn. Let me interject some birth order. And firstborns don't like surprises. Yeah. They're planners and organizers, as are only children. They don't like the curveballs in life. They like those fastballs. So that was another problem with that one. But I've learned that she needs to be loved differently than I need to be loved. And yet we can come together as we have for 32 years and made great music and five great kids.
Women are different, no doubt about it. Do you know that if you ask Shirley today, after we've been married for 39 years, the most romantic moment she remembers? It was after we'd been married for 7 days. We were on our honeymoon and coming home. I got up in that dumb little motel room that we could afford at that time and went out someplace and got a sweet roll mm-hmm. For each of us mm-hmm. and coffee and came back and had it waiting for her when she woke up. She considers that dumb little moment to have been a highlight of the last 39 years because it was romantic to her.
Right. And yet, if you ask, and I've asked this to my wife, and I've asked my wife, "What's the nicest thing that I've ever done for you?" I can tell you it was the day she got the phone call. Her mother died unexpectedly. And she was in her 9th month of pregnancy with our little Lauren. Mm. We were in New York at the time. And she couldn't travel back to Tucson. And I had a speaking engagement. And I sat on the floor behind my wife as she was talking to her aunt who was breaking the news to her. And I heard this wailing. And I just knew something tragic had happened. And I put my arms around her and I just cradled her. And then I got on the phone and got the information and hung up. And for a good hour and a half, I just held her and cradled her. I didn't know what else. I never felt so helpless in my life. But what do? You cancel the seminar. You go and you hop on the airplane and you go 2,500 miles and you do what you have to do. And poor Sandy couldn't travel. Mm. For me, it was when I surrendered my gallbladder a couple summers ago. And I'm not a good patient in a hospital. In fact, I took my IV out, and the staff was very upset over that. But, you know, God love her. She stayed with me the entire night. Mm. She knows I'm paranoid about hospitals. I just don't like being in the places. And I think every couple today ought to sit down and say, hey, honey, what's the kindest thing that I've ever done for you? And then maybe you'll get vulnerable like I did one day. And I went to Sandy. I said, honey, would you make me a list of things that would make me a better husband? You know what she said? She said, sure. And she started to write. And I thought, hey, she's got a sense of humor, too. She's not writing about me. She's writing milk and eggs and, you know, making her grocery list or something. But she wasn't. She was writing about me. But the number one thing she said, and I'll never forget it, she said, when I don't feel good, take the kids to church anyway. Hmm. So what Sandy Lehman wants of Kevin Lehman, she wants me to be the spiritual leader in our family. And women, boy, we hear it from them all the time. Ladies, I'm telling you, you can't keep beating on us, okay? You got to let us be men, and we're going to let you be women. And if we follow God's plan for marriage and we stay within those boundaries, there's a great little scripture in Jude. Do you know how many chapters Jude has, Mr. Trout?
One.
Very good. Just putting you on the spot. Jude 1:21 says something in effect of always stay within those parameters, those guidelines, so you can receive the blessing of Jesus Christ. What a great message.
Your illustration of being in the hospital and surrendering your gallbladder reminds me of one of the highlights of our marriage. From my perspective, was the night I had the stroke, and I couldn't speak all night long and into the next morning. And I'm sure the physicians thought I was not even aware, but I knew Shirley was standing there. She stood beside me all night, or almost all night. And the next morning, the first thing I was able to do was to reach up to touch her face. And I knew what she'd been through. And my heart ached for her because of the pain that I knew she was in. And I reached up and touched her face and said, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that was your first thought?
That was the very first thought, was what she had contributed to me through that night. She got me through that night. And I couldn't even talk to her. When marriage is right, it's wonderful, isn't it?
If you can learn to be a giver and not a taker, not only will you enjoy a great marriage, but as little Buford and Festus and those other kids look up at you, they're going to walk away knowing that mommy and daddy love each other, respect each other, and have a Christ-centered home. If you've done that for your kids, you've given them a great legacy in life.
That reminds me of a little saying that I've used for 25 or 30 years, that there are two kinds of people in the world, the givers and the takers, but the givers sleep well.
Yes.
You remember me using that?
I sure have heard that.
Kevin, it's always fun having you here to talk about so many subjects. We've been meandering through your revised book, Sex Begins in the Kitchen. You wrote this in the 80s. I think early 80s, as I recall.
1980, I believe.
Yeah, and it's still out there and it's still being used by people. You almost retitled it, didn't you?
Almost did.
Because it's so different.
It's more than a revision. It's almost a new book. It's about double the size of the original book.
Subtitle says, Because Love is an All-Day Affair, and it really does come down to that. It's always good to have you here. We've been doing this for a long time, since 1983, and you have a standing invitation to come back with us.
Thanks so much. God bless both of you.
Thank you. Well, I hope you have enjoyed this conversation, this series, as much as I have. With Dr. Kevin Lehman, again, the title of his book is Sex Begins in the Kitchen. It's available, I'm sure, in a bookstore near you. If you'd like to get in touch with us here at Focus on the Family, you can do that through the World Wide Web at family.org. That's www.family.org. Well, our producer was Deanna Williams. Engineering and production were taken care of by Kim Paca and Steve Ryder. Our executive producer is Mrs. Bobby Valentine. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And I'm Mike Trout, inviting you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.